don't land until you've stopped flying, and don't land until you've made a controlled descent. I'm Paul Platt, and this is Aero News. Welcome into the Aero News special feature, and thanks for downloading us today. Paul Platt here with Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, the journal for the proficient pilot. Bob's also a flight instructor based in the Buffalo, New York area. Bob, thanks very much for taking some time out for our listeners today.
As always, Paul, it's my pleasure.
You wrote in the December issue of Over the Airwaves something called, I'm trying to think back now, I think I was thinking Orson Welles' wine commercials of a few years ago that we will make no landing before it's time.
That's exactly what the headline was intended to emulate, yes.
Okay, all right. Well, tell us more about what you're getting at here.
Well, very often, and anybody who has struggled either as an instructor with a student or the pilot themselves, struggled with having consistent smooth landings. This particular subject, no landing is ready before its time, has real benefit. That is, we have to realize that an airplane has two states. It's either flying or it's taxiing. There's nothing in between. And the art of smooth landings, of course, is to put the airplane on the runway at the precise moment that it stops flying. And to do that, we have to have speed under control. And if speed's not under control, even though we're over the runway, we cannot, subject ourselves to the temptation or allow the temptation to put the airplane down on the runway, because it's simply going to bounce and perhaps bounce back up in the air. So what do we do? The only thing that we can do is just simply hold the airplane off the runway using increasing back pressure on the stick or yoke until such time that just as it stops flying, just on the verge of stall, the tires settle down on the runway.
All right. Well, I have to throw in, I guess, at this point that we're into an interesting time of year, because I think a lot of people who get away with coming in hotter than they need to, especially if they're based at an airport with a long runway, get away with this routinely. And then if they're flying a spring gear airplane like a Cessna in the wintertime without any oleo struts or other shock absorbers, they find out it's a whole different world if the runway gets a little contaminated.
Well, yeah. I mean, all kinds of things can happen if we put the airplane down before it stops flying. We can certainly bounce the airplane. If we put it down on the nose wheel will compress and literally spring us back into the air. I think the importance of it is really drilled into our head. If we can simply keep our eye on the airspeed indicator at that moment that we're over the runway, and with my students, particularly as they're learning to do this, I'm reading the airspeed indicator aloud to them as they settle over the runway. You know, I'll say, 72, 70, 69, don't even think about it. 65, stop thinking about it. 62, keep flying. 61, keep flying. 57, not ready. 52, not ready. Okay, 50, we should be now within inches of the runway. 49, at that point, the airplane now just settles down and rolls to a smooth stop. One of the things that the word pictures or metaphors that I've used, or even a life experience that I've used with students, and I wrote about this in an earlier edition, when as children we went to the playground and climbed up on the slide, and we slid down the slide, our mom or our dad or a friend was down there to catch us as we came barreling down the slide and would hopefully land on our feet on the playground surface. If we think landing an airplane is done exactly the same way that we come down a playground slide, that is, we're going to slide, flare, and then plop, most landings will not be successful. If, on the other hand, we do not think of the slide per se, but we think rather of just holding the airplane off as long as we can until it settles to, as I said before, to the runway surface just at that verge of stall. Sometimes that takes a bit of runway to master, and we can practice this on a longer runway. Again, consummate speed control, keeping the airplane in the air when it's in the flying state, and then allow it to transition to the runway just at that magical moment.
Well, and this does take some coordination too, because unless you've got a huge long runway, you can't do one and then the other. You have to kind of do them both together. You can't get down to within inches of the runway at 100 knots and then wait for it to bleed off, or you're going to run out of runway.
Yeah, you will. And one of the pieces of good news that I found over the years is it becomes progressively easier to achieve this when operating more sophisticated airplanes. Airplanes with very light wing loading, like a J-3 Cub, or even a trainer like a Cessna 172 or a Piper Warrior, they tend to respond to tiny gusts of wind because there's light wing loading. The airplane will bounce back up in the sky with even a slight gust. A heavier airplane or a higher performing airplane, I'm doing a lot of training now in the Cessna 400, very similar to the Cirrus SR-22. There's the wing loadings are not nearly as light, therefore they're not as subject to airspeed fluctuations. You basically fly them more or less to the ground. But again, speed is king in this kind of a thing. We have to be able to master that proper airspeed all the way down to that the landing point. And learning to keep our eye on the airspeed indicator to that point is one of the keys to success.
Well, I know that you have pinned exactly one of the concerns a lot of people had about the emergence of light sport aircraft, in that to achieve all the various performance parameters that were going to make them both competitive and legal in the category, it was going to require light wing loading. And there have indeed been some that some accidents that were attributed to, you know, a little extra sensitivity to gusting winds.
Well, yeah, I'm looking anxiously or waiting anxiously for the accident data on the light sport. We just don't have enough of it yet to draw conclusions, particularly light sport pilots that were trained just with a minimum as specified in FAR 61, the 20 hours of training and that's it. I have great reservations with regard to that light sport aircraft, and not to diverge into or divert into another entire subject or discussion, which we may have sometime. Light sport aircraft are in many times more difficult to land than these heavier airplanes.
Well, they may have the FAA in defining the category based on stall speed may have had to play kind of a sliding game of where do you want to compromise there, because obviously with lighter wing loading you can bring the stall speed down, but you also create that effect. Well, Bob, when we come back from the break, let's talk a little bit about what comes before any landing, good or otherwise, and that's the descent, and maybe one of the more overlooked parts of planning a trip into an airport. Bob Miller is my guest. Paul Plack here. You're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
Do you feel stimulated? Hey, that's why Congress passed the Economic Stimulus Act of 2008, so loyal Americans like yourself would feel stimulated to help rev up the economy by spending money on important stuff like new Garmin avionics. We're talking potential tax incentives, bonus depreciation up to 50% in first-year cost allowances for qualified business use equipment purchases. See your tax advisor for guidance and your Garmin dealer for one whale of a stimulus package. It's almost like your patriotic duty, huh? Garmin, follow the leader.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. The Cirrus SR-20 G2. Interested in a substantial airplane that remains practical and affordable? Whether you're a non-pilot looking to begin flying lessons, a pilot needing personal transportation, or a fleet customer selecting the best plane to meet the demands of a multiple aircraft operation, consider the SR-20 G2. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
Welcome back to the Aero News special feature. Paul Plack here with Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves. We're talking about landings, and before you can make a landing, you have to make a descent. You have to come down to first pattern altitude, and then you have to come down to approach, and then you have to land it on the runway. And Bob, you wrote in Over the Airwaves for December about planning descents for comfort, airframe integrity, and a few other factors. Tell us what some of these are.
Well, descending from altitude to pattern altitude in a traditional training aircraft, again, I'll speak of a Piper Warrior or a Cessna 172, those airplanes are very, very forgiving. They slow quickly. They do not reach very high speeds on the descent because of the inherent drag just by the design of the airplane. But so many of us now are transitioning to high-performance airplanes with relatively little time to begin with. I'm again speaking of the Cirrus SR-22, the Cessna 400, both wonderfully designed airplanes. But as I said some time back, that I'm I'm working with a number of students now with a Cessna 400, and after doing a lot of training in typical training aircraft myself, I'm finding it difficult, not difficult, but I'll say challenging, to slow those airplanes down when descending down from higher altitudes. They've got their very clean airframes, very, very little drag, and if we do not plan that descent properly, we're going to get to a point where we're simply going too fast to get the flaps out, and then we have a real speed management problem. So one of the things that we can do is to use the technology that's available almost on any GPS unit, whether it's a handheld unit or a sophisticated unit like a G1000, and that is to get into the planning, the vertical planning, vertical nav capability of those boxes, and begin to determine when we have to begin our descent in order to arrive at a desired lower altitude without overspeeding the airplane, without shock cooling the engine, without popping the eardrums of ourselves and our passengers, and maintaining the integrity of the airframe.
Well, and you know, the example you used in your calculation there was interesting, of flying in your 210 at 190 knots true airspeed with a 90 knot tailwind. And I won't give away the answer for listeners who haven't seen the edition of Over the Airwaves yet. But essentially, if you were flying from Cleveland to Rochester, you'd have to start your descent somewhere west of Buffalo.
Well, yes, and that's exactly right. And when you look at how many minutes there is to the destination, that's the key. And we can do this with our GPS. So that if we're up at higher altitudes, even in the flight level, say we're at 14,000 feet, or 16,000 feet, or 18,000 feet, our GPS at any point in time will give us minutes to our destination. So if we have 15 minutes to our destination and we descend at 1,000 feet per minute, we can quickly determine how far out we have to start down in order to not arrive at our destination at too high an altitude. We can do that either by just doing a little bit of number crunching, as I've just pointed out, the math is very simple, or figuring out what's called the top of descent, the TOD. That's a term that we see in GPS is now top of descent. And we'll see that on the course as we look at it on the moving map. Once we plug in the numbers, a little TOD sign or circle will appear on the course line. It says, at this point, George, you're going to have to begin down if you want to arrive at your approach altitude without overspeeding the airplane. And it's a great function, and it's something that a lot of us wait until we become power users before even power GPS users before we begin even exploring that. But this is something, again, that once you start flying these higher performing airplanes, and not just the glass composite airplanes that I'm referring to, but I'm thinking of the Bonanza A36 or the Cessna 210. These are fast airplanes, and that speed has to be managed. Also, those of us who are flying turbocharged airplanes often will begin our descent from a very high altitude. Coming into Buffalo, for example, from the west, I very often have to begin my descent almost 90 miles out if I'm up high in the flight levels, 18, 20,000 feet with a tailwind. Mm-hmm. That's a long time to think about having to start down, but again, something we should be doing.
Well, and you talked about comfort, airframe integrity, engine care, safety. There were two other reasons that occurred to me just in my limited experience flying that might be good reasons to start an approach on a plan like that. One is noise abatement. Some of the airports you'll be flying into, especially if you're coming in at night, you're going to be flying over people's houses, and there's really no reason to have to keep circling overhead three or four times to get down to pattern altitude, or to come in so low that you have to power back up and fly at high power settings over low altitudes. And the other one is fuel. I mean, you can, if you plan this carefully, you're going to save some fuel. And, we're looking at pretty low fuel prices right now, but I don't think that's going to last.
Well, both of those reasons are excellent reasons. I've asked my students, why are we starting down so soon? Well, I want to be sure to be down in time to begin my approach. And I said, well, you know, altitude's our friend, mm-hmm. Particularly at night. And we don't want to give up that altitude any sooner than we have to in case we need it for any kind of an emergency situation. Yet on the other hand, as you've described, we don't want to arrive at our destination too high where we're spending a lot of time, you know, doing S-turns on final or trying to do a slam dunk kind of an entry. Mm-hmm. Fuel management, airplane management, shock cooling. It's just a gentle power reduction, well planned. Give us a nice 600, 700, 800 foot per minute descent. The passengers may not even be awakened if they're sleeping in the back as we begin our descent. That's the way we want to fly. We want to be able to manage this thing so that, we're in charge and we know at each point or each phase or each mile along the route, we know exactly where we are and where we should be.
Well, Bob, I hope this to one day be a proficient enough pilot that my passengers can sleep while I'm flying. Bob, thanks so much, as always. We look forward to talking to you again on Monday, January 5th. Have a great holiday.
Thanks, Bob. I'll talk to you.
You can find Bob Miller's newsletter at overtheairwaves.com and also a link to more information about Bob Miller Flight Training Incorporated. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.